The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
This episode of the Old Dogs REI Network is brought to you by Mino Studio.
In a world where jobs are how most people make money, one man, one desire, one challenge dares to break the mold. Welcome to the Old Dogs REI Network, where we don't work for money. Money works for us. Coming soon, viewer discretion advised.
Welcome to the Old Dogs REI Network, where cash flow is king. Real estate investing, the means, so you can enjoy your retirement dreams. This is the show where we cut right to the chase. No sales pitch, no long monologues, just simple how-to real estate investing advice, so you can earn the passive income you need to enjoy your retirement today. And now, your host and chief old dog, Bill Manassero.
Welcome to the Old Dogs REI Network. I'm your host, Bill Manassero, and this is the show where 50-plussers and anyone else who wants to join us get solid, no-sales-pitch real estate investing advice to help generate real cash flow. This podcast airs twice weekly on Mondays and Fridays, and if you aren't already a subscriber, go to iTunes or Apple Podcasts, type in Old Dogs, spelled D-A-W-G-S, find our podcast, and subscribe. Well, we have a great show for you today. We have a gentleman here who is an expert landlord. And this is a good time to talk to landlords because I know many of you that are investors, and a lot of you, if you are investors, you're probably landlords too, have been encountering some of the challenges that COVID and the pandemic have sort of brought upon the real estate investing world. So we're going to be talking to a gentleman named Andrew Schultz, and he is a real estate broker and owner of Own Buffalo Inc., or OBI, a residential property management firm and real estate brokerage in Buffalo, New York. With a passion for investment property and property management extending over a decade, Andrew's goal is to educate investors, both young and old, on how to avoid some of the pitfalls of investing and property management. In addition to running OBI, Andrew hosts the Rent Prep for Landlords podcast. And I'm sure you guys that are regular listeners of the show are familiar with Rent Prep. They're a company we highly recommend for landlords, as well as his own show called Ask a Property Manager Show. Well, Andrew, welcome to the Old Dogs REI Network.
Wow, Bill, thank you so much. That was excellent. I don't think I've ever been talked up quite so nicely before.
Well, we're not going to listen to what other people say. So, I'm just kidding you. Andrew is a great guy and good friend of Steve White, who is with Rent Prep. And as I mentioned, has been on the show as well. But Andrew, this is great because not only are you a landlord, which most of us investors are, even though we may have a property manager handling our property, we're still under that umbrella as landlord. But you also have a property management firm. So I also want to you know, sort of pick your brain from that standpoint as well, and about some of the challenges you folks are facing in light of COVID as well. So, but before we get started, you know, our guests like to hear about you and, you know, where you came from and how you got into real estate and blah, 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 all the basic stuff there. You know, I was born in, you know, a corner of Buffalo, New York, and, you know, no, you know, whatever. Why don't you just give it your background.
Yeah, so I'm not sure if I'm qualified to be on the Old Dog Show. I'm a little bit younger than maybe some of the guys listening, some of the guys and gals listening. But you know, I grew up in rural New York, rural Western New York, outside of Buffalo, a small town called Medina. We were very, very much a working class family, very much hand to mouth, not a ton of money going around and things like that. It was a very small, basically farming community that I grew up in. And honestly, my mom was a landlord. So I can remember back when I was a kid, there would be times where we would be out doing turnovers on apartments and stuff like that. And it was certainly a family affair. It would be my mother, my brothers, myself, and we would all be out there painting and doing whatever needed to be done to get apartments ready. And I can remember, you know, back when I was a kid, I would sit with a newspaper. They used to actually publish, I think they were the Sears houses, the Sears kit houses.
Oh, wow.
They used to publish the floor plans in the newspaper, and I would clip those out and put them into a notebook. So I guess that was my first foray into real estate, if you will.
That's great. That's great. Now, these were kit houses that you could buy in the Sears catalog and like build your own little house.
No, these were this was way back. Sears used to sell a home kit that would literally arrive by rail. And you would basically get all of the lumber and all of the wiring and everything you would need as a kit, if you will, to build your own home. And then they used to put the floor plans for those in like I think it was the Sunday newspaper, the Home Finder thing or something like that. And I used to love clipping those out and saving them.
What a trip. So they would ship everything to basically build your own home.
Though. Oh, yeah. Yeah. They don't do it anymore, obviously.
Sears catalogs had everything. I mean, you could order, you know, like a new family member, I think, you know. I mean, Sears catalogs go back to like the 1800s, right? I mean, that was just like the way that people used to get things. It was sort of the Amazon of the past, you know?
Yeah.
In-store
pickup and stuff like that. They would ship it right to the store and you could pick it up.
Yes. So that's wild. Wow. You sound older than you really are. I mean, we let young pups come on the show as well as old dogs, you know, but I'll tell you, you sound like you've got, you know, history there. It goes back. I mean, Sears catalogs. Wow. That's that's wild. That's great. So that kind of got you interested. Your mom had some apartments, it sounds like. And so you would think almost, you know, especially as you were doing the grunt work and involved with all the back stuff, that'd be the last thing you'd want to do when you grew up. Was to go into that, you know, back into that again. But you obviously had an interest in and pursued it.
Yeah, it wasn't direct. There was a path that we went down to get there. I mean, by the time I graduated high school, my mother had sold the income properties and stuff at that point. And I went off to college and got a bachelor's degree in criminal justice and thought that I was going to go into law enforcement, which didn't really pan out that way. I don't regret it. I learned a lot. I take a lot of things from my degree program and apply them to my property management business. So I don't regret it in the slightest to have a degree that's not necessarily tailored to the field that I find myself in, because I think there was still a lot of valuable experience to be had there. And it wasn't until well after college, I was working basically a dead-end job doing collections of all things. And realized that was not the life that I wanted, and found a position actually on Craigslist of all places. I found someone looking for an admin assistant for their management company, their property management company. I sent an email, got an interview, got hired, and here we are 12-ish years later. Now I have my own management company, and it's a little bit different scenario than what I thought I was going to be doing at this point in my life. But I don't have any regrets, that's for sure.
Well, I'm sure the law enforcement background, you know, comes in handy. I know and we've had people that have stayed in some of our units, and you know, you have to go in there almost like calling CSI or something, you know, to figure out what the heck happened to this place. What did they do? You know, and I kind of wish I had that background. You know, I could bring out the fingerprint, you know, stuff.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, even simple stuff. Like I took one of the classes I took in college was just on like investigative research and things like that. And just understanding how to look at things from, you know, a 30,000 mile view, if you will, being able to separate yourself from the situation and really figure out what's actually going on. That's probably one of the most useful skills that I picked out during my time in college. And I use that basically every single day.
Wow. Well, you know, I have a lot of respect for you. Being a, you know, property manager is a huge responsibility, but it's also, I see challenges too that you must deal with every day, everything from problem tenants to problem clients to, you know, you name it. And I know that it's, you know, it can be a challenge there. Do you work with single family homes and apartments or one or the other? What types of rental properties are you dealing with?
Yeah, a little bit of both, actually. So our market is predominantly smaller multis, so duplexes, triplexes, quads, things of that nature. There's also a ton of single family inventory, but that tends to be more owner occupied and less on the rental side. But what we do see is we get a lot of clients that they're building their portfolio and they're starting with the most accessible asset, which is typically a duplex, a triplex, a quad, something like that. And then they'll get, you know, a few of those and then try to move up into maybe a 10 or a 20 unit or something like that. So it's interesting to kind of be at the ground level when people are building a portfolio, because you can help them to avoid a lot of the pitfalls that new investors make, simply because we've already been there before and made those mistakes. So we don't have to put somebody else through it, which is nice.
Yeah, I could imagine that, that, you know, especially with the 12 years of experience, you definitely have seen, I'm sure, a lot during that time. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, for us as a, you know, or for myself as an investor, you know, the property manager, and all I do is invest out of state. So that's my most critical team member. I mean, we have, you know, a lot of people on our team, but I think in terms of the success of, you know, a particular investment, that is, you know, we're completely reliant upon people like you that, you know, for us to be successful at what we do. So I think the partnership is really important. And, you know, we also end up, you know, maybe joining together on projects or relying on you folks, you know, for referrals. Hey, have you seen any other, you know, larger buildings in the area that may be available, or maybe you're managing one that, you know, is, you know, the person shopping around right now to sell. And so, you know, there's been some great alliances there that have been real helpful.
Yeah, absolutely. There's certainly a lot of depth in what a property manager does and the types of people they come in contact, just like you had said, anybody from, you know, other investors to vendors that we work with to, you know, the other real estate agents that we network with and stuff like that. There's having a well-connected property manager is kind of the key to success if you're trying to do something out of state like what you are. It's without a good property manager to kind of open those doors and get you kind of moving down the right path, it can be a real challenge. It's almost impossible to invest out of state unless you have a good team built around you. And I think that has to start with, in my opinion, a property manager and a good contractor. Both of those need to be at the top of the list.
You got it. That is to the T. The top areas. I mean, yeah, you need a good attorney and some other folks that are on the ground in that state that know the laws. And when you have to, you know, deal with them, whether it's evictions or, you know, worse things, you want to make sure you've got those folks in place. But the day-to-day stuff is definitely you guys, and that's real critical. You know, you've been doing this for a while, and I'm sure you've, you know, seen a lot of different things, but I really did want to zero in a little bit here on this. I can't even say post-COVID. It's really still a COVID
right.
You know, world right now. And and you also have a unique issue in that you're in a state that has, you know, been very visible in terms of things that have happened in COVID, especially with your governor, you know, not to get political.
Yeah.
But I know you've probably seen a lot of challenging things. And I thought maybe you could just kind of share what, you know, some of those key issues are and maybe, you know, some examples of how you've dealt with those things. I mean, it could be anything from, you know, evictions to, you know, just some of the, you know, maybe the vacancies or whatever that you guys mm-hmm. are dealing with on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess I would say it started like everybody else started with COVID, with just confusion as to, okay, what are the next steps and things like that? Because no one knows what to do when a global pandemic hits. So it was really relying on the systems and things that we have in place from an operational standpoint to ensure that we were continuing to move things forward as much as possible. While the systems got us, you know, probably, let's say 85% of the way there, there was still that last 15% of, okay, what happens next? And in a lot of ways, we were drawn to basically be doing a ton of research in legislation. I still spend a pretty substantial portion of my time every week just reviewing what legislation is coming up that's going to have an impact on not only, you know, my business, but the business of my clients. From a real estate perspective, whether it be, you know, obviously we have eviction moratoriums here in the state of New York, foreclosure moratoriums, this, that, the other thing, you know, trying to access the funds that have been issued by the federal government. Like we're basically out there every day right now, just trying to stay one step ahead of whatever the legislative agenda is that's on the table. Just trying to stay ahead to basically keep our clients' best interests at heart. The big question mark lately has been trying to access the rent relief funds that they've been talking about so much as part of the last stimulus, and that stimulus that they're trying to pass now, you know, there's an earmark there for those funds, but trying to access the funds is the challenging part. That's what we're working through right now. So it's, you know, it's every day has been a little bit different. We've sat and had our faces glued to the press conferences, just the same as everybody else did there at the beginning. Real estate was essentially completely shut down here in Western New York for a period of about 2 months at the beginning of the pandemic. We had some exemptions because property management is considered an essential business and our contracting that we do relating to the management is more or less considered essential. So we did have, you know, some ability to operate, but we were really tied down there for a while at the beginning of everything, just trying to figure it out like everybody else, essentially.
Now, are your eviction moratoriums still in place? Because most of the other states that I invest in, you know, they've been lifted.
So the current moratorium in New York is until May 1st, if I remember correctly. And then I know that there's the federal one, which is in place until September 30th, I believe. But that one's a lot less restrictive than the one that we have in New York currently, which is essentially no evictions for non-payment, which is what it's been since the beginning. But they've, in the most recent one, added on the no evictions for holdover. Basically, the only carve-out that's left is eviction due to tenant doing a bunch of damage to your unit or tenant dealing drugs out of your unit or something like that. The problem is the courts are not acting to hear those cases either. So essentially, we've been at zero evictions moving forward since March of last year.
Has that impacted clients in a way, I mean, a critical way, and where you have people basically just, you know, either filing bankruptcy or, you know, I don't know what they can do at this point.
Right.
You know, if there's a moratorium on foreclosures, well, maybe they don't have to do that either. I don't know. It applies to your commercial property as well as the residential. But, mm-hmm. You know, have you seen it sort of manifest in that way?
So we do have some clients that are, it really depends on what kind of a position the client was in before this whole thing kicked off, because the clients that were in a good position prior to this, for the most part, tend to continue to be in a good position. The clients that were struggling coming into this are continuing to struggle. And in some situations, we are seeing the situation get worse simply because of non-paying tenants and things of that nature. What we've been trying to do for our clients, just as much as we are tenants, so like when a tenant approaches us and says, hey, I need help, we're trying to get them the resources that they need, giving them a list of available, you know, rental assistance agencies and things like that. On the client side, we're doing basically the same thing. We're talking to our clients and saying, you know, okay, do you have the option of a mortgage forbearance for a couple of months while you try to right the ship? Do you have the ability to go back to your lender and maybe refinance this thing altogether at better terms? Do you have the ability to defer some mortgage payments, whatever the case may be? Essentially just trying to arm our clients with as much knowledge as possible as well, so that they can make good decisions and navigate this the same way that we are. So it's definitely been a challenge trying to figure out how to help as many people as possible within our little ecosystem here, if you will.
Well, you're definitely going the extra mile. I haven't heard too many property managers doing that same thing. That's awesome. Mm-hmm. That you're working on both the client and tenant side. Are you finding that there are more problems, based on the class of the property, the A, B, or C type class properties or Ds?
I would say, yeah. We don't really have any issues with our Class A, B properties. Our Class C stuff is where we're struggling a little bit. And I shouldn't even say struggling, because we're still well over 90% collected on a month-by-month basis on all of our rents. The issue is the same tenants that haven't paid us since last March are the same tenants that aren't paying us now. So you just have that ever-expanding, past due rent balance that's sitting there. And that's the scary part of the whole situation, is watching some of those balances climb up.
Are you doing anything creative to maybe collect some portion of those rents?
We're helping everybody that wants help, essentially. We do have some tenants that are just choosing to kind of stick their head in the sand and hope that this whole thing goes away, which is probably not the best tactic for them to take. But any tenant that has been in contact with us, we're doing whatever we can to help get them in touch with the resources that they need to get themselves back on the right track, essentially. I mean, I had a very frank conversation with a tenant the other day, and I basically said that we both know that you are not in possession of the funds necessary to bring your balance current, for whatever reason, job loss or whatever the case may be. The best way for us to help you is for you to help us by going out and applying for these assistances and things like that. And it's, in some instances, it's working. And in some instances, it's not. It really just boils down to how much the tenant wants to work with you, or how much they want to ignore the problem, or whatever the case may be. So the tenants that want help are certainly receiving help. The tenants that don't want help, the tenants that are kind of taking that scorched earth path, if you will, they're a lot more challenging to deal with right now.
Right. And on the client side, I know that, we've even looked at SBA for certain, properties and so forth. Hasn't been real responsive, and it might be because, again, the pending bill and some other issues out there. But how are you finding in terms of client assistance going?
So I would say so far, so good. We've had some clients that have reached out to us looking for various assistance, and we've been able to kind of help them find assistance via different means. Some clients, we're helping them find refinancing for their property. We work with an excellent credit repair person that, if some of our clients, if they've got a damaged credit issue, or maybe they hit some late pays at the beginning of the pandemic, which has brought their score down to whatever, and it's preventing them from getting like a refinance or something like that. We have guys that we work with that are able to sometimes do like a rapid rescore. Like if you clear off XYZ credit card or whatever, we can get your score rapid rescored so that it jumps up by 50 points. And now you might be eligible for that refinance to keep you moving forward. We've certainly pushed people towards PPP loans whenever possible, if they are eligible. And some of our clients have been, some of our clients have not been. There has been, in I think pretty much every stimulus that's come out, there's been something to help protect homeowners, usually 1-4 unit homeowners that are dealing with these situations where I can't make a mortgage payment, I got a tax bill due, stuff like that. So we're basically trying to access funds and things like that whenever possible, even lines of credit. Sometimes if somebody has some equity in the property, we can help them access a line of credit or something like that using our credit repair specialist if necessary, to basically unlock funds to kind of keep things moving. I think the one thing that a lot of tenants don't understand is that most property owners, most housing providers only own one investment property. Like 75%, I think was the last stat that I saw, of investors only own that one rental property. And like something like 50% of those 75%, they're what you would call an accidental landlord. They had to move because of a work relocation, or they inherited a house when a family member passed away or something like that. They don't want to be landlords. They don't have the time to do the research into the legislation and understand the rules and the regulations and everything else. They're just trying to figure out what to do next, because they have a tenant that's not paying and they don't know what to do. So that's really what we're trying to do, is help people. We can't evict. I mean, we have an eviction moratorium. The tenant's not going anywhere. So what we're doing is just trying to help them find the resources to keep themselves afloat in some instances until we get through this and can start actually operating the properties correctly.
What about with new tenants trying to fill vacancies? Do you find that you kind of lighten up a little bit on requirements because of how everybody has been impacted, by whether it's job loss or other financial issues?
No, not really. We haven't really adjusted our criteria at all. So our criteria are basically pretty straightforward. It's a standardized process that we use every time we screen a tenant. And we're looking for 3 times the rent net income, and we're looking for a credit score somewhere around 600. Then obviously we're doing the background checks and credit checks and talking to landlord references and things of that nature. So our criteria really haven't changed as a result of all this. I will say that we're definitely looking at every application a lot more carefully. There's been landlords that have been receiving fake pay stubs and things like that. So we're constantly monitoring to make sure that the information we're receiving is truthful and valid, I guess, is the best way of putting it. But as far as the actual criteria themselves, no, the criteria really haven't changed for us.
How about length of their most recent job? Do you have a requirement there?
I wish that we could, to be honest with you. So if they have a lawful source of income in the state of New York, it gets a little bit kind of picky as to there's a piece of legislation that basically says if they have a lawful source of income, you have to accept that as income, which would include, it was basically put in place for like Section 8 vouchers and things like that. But what we have found is, as part of the pandemic here with the pandemic unemployment assistance and things like that, we were seeing people that were applying with basically unemployment as their sole source of income, which is a lawful source of income, but it puts you in a real nasty situation as a housing provider when okay, I know that you have income, but I also know that the stop date of your income is very, very finite. It's a challenge, to be sure.
Yeah, I bet. Well, what would you say as a landlord, what's sort of the biggest mistake you might have encountered or seen your clients maybe repeatedly, stumble into that could be something our listeners could learn from and try to avoid?
I would say my biggest mistake from an overall business perspective was probably to not take on a mentor sooner. I think that I probably should have done that several years before I did, and hired a consultant or a business consultant, if you will, to help us with just kind of getting, you get to a point where you need to, I don't want to use the term legitimize, but put a polish on things, make things look a little bit more professional and kind of define what your true target audience and stuff like that is. And I wish I would have done that a lot sooner. I wish I would have hired somebody to kind of push me in the right direction earlier on. And I think that we would be in a little bit different position now, probably a little bit larger company. But I would say that's probably the biggest mistake that I made was just not listening to advice from people who had been there before. So if you're going to take advice from somebody, make sure it's somebody who's either been where you're trying to get or, something along those lines, has been there before. Don't take advice from, your uncle Steve that's never owned a property, has rented an apartment his entire life, doesn't know a net operating income from a bag of groceries or whatever. Take your mentorship from somebody who understands your industry specifically, and make sure that person is working in your best interest or helping you to develop in a positive fashion, I would say. That was probably my biggest mistake, though, was not taking on a good mentor early on.
Yeah, likewise, same here. That really, mm-hmm. really does make a difference. How about, would you say something that you've done that has really been successful and it has made a big difference in your business?
I would say learning how to systemize things and building those systems and putting those systems in place. Anytime you have to do something more than once and it becomes like a repetitive task, the best example I have of this is like the data entry of us entering bills into our maintenance system or our management system. That's something that's very time consuming. And it's one of those things that as the business owner, I want that off my plate as soon as possible because it just takes up so much time. So getting a system in place as to, okay, when a vendor sends us a bill, this is how the bill gets saved onto the computer and recorded into the system and how it gets paid out and when it gets paid out and things like that. Just building those systems out so that you understand how to operate your business is critical, because eventually you're going to want somebody else to step in and kind of take the reins as you grow. There will be parts of the business that you want to give up, whether you admit it now or not. If you're smaller, as you grow, there will be parts of the business that you want to give up. Nobody wants to swing hammers and splash paint on walls forever. Somebody eventually is going to want to sit on a beach in Cancun, and that can't happen if you're still throwing paint on walls. So.
Yeah, great point. I think the E-Myth, Michael Gerber's book. I don't know if you're familiar mm-hmm. with, but that's his whole thing, is that, working on your business, not in your business. And part of that mm-hmm. are setting up systems as if you're going to be a franchise and you're going to hand it off to somebody one day. And I think that's really good practice there. How about looking at our audience here? Our folks are people 50 years of age and older. Some of them are approaching retirement, some are already in retirement, and they're kind of looking at real estate investing. And frankly, one of the things there, I think that they encounter that is a little challenging is, they've heard horror stories about property management firms. They've heard horror stories about just being a landlord. What advice would you have for those folks that, would love to do it and, not only for an income source, but something to do in retirement too, mm-hmm. that generates income. Mm-hmm. So what advice would you have for those? And just again, from your experience, you've encountered a lot of investors and a lot of people that have probably done it right and some that haven't done it right.
Oh, absolutely. And actually, that was the first thing I was going to say was this business is simply put, this business is not for everybody. There are a lot of avenues to make revenue in real estate. You don't necessarily have to be the boots on the ground landlord that is self-managing or something like that. There's a ton of options out there. There's commercial triple net leases. There are REITs. There are a million different ways to generate revenue in real estate. And it doesn't necessarily have to be the traditional, I bought this property, I'm going to fix this property, I'm going to rent this property out, and the tenant's going to pay my mortgage for me. There are a multitude of different ways to kind of get into the real estate industry. And it doesn't necessarily have to be, the direct ownership of an asset. You could even do something like hard money lending or something like that if you wanted to be kind of on the outskirts of the industry, but still involved in the industry. So that would be my advice to people would be, understand what you want to do and what you don't want to do. Know what your strengths and weaknesses are. Know the market that you want to invest in and work with pros. And then if direct asset ownership is not something that you want to do, then start looking for partners that maybe they'll take on the day-to-day headache and you can just be the back end money or something like that. So there's a ton of different ways to get into the real estate industry. I certainly recommend that you find the avenue that works for you, but understand that not every avenue is going to be the best possible avenue for you. It's going to depend on how you are as a person and what your goals and what your goals and your outline for your path is. So it's important to understand that, I think. And some people do miss that and wind up with residential tenants that they're arguing with constantly, or they don't know what to do because the tenant has control of a situation or whatever the case may be. You can avoid that. There's a lot of paths to success in this industry. Just find the one that works best for you.
That's great advice. Great advice. Well, looking at your company, it sounds like you guys are growing and doing some exciting things there. What's sort of your long-term play here and what excites you about the future of your company?
So we are growing our property management arm right now. We've actually been picking up quite a few clients over the course of the last few months, mostly clients that have some kind of a sticky situation that they're trying to work through, and they're coming to us almost as much for coaching consulting. I don't want to say that because that's not really a service that we offer, but almost coming to us for like a professional consultation almost as much as they are for the management aspect of it, which has been nice. And I know that some of those clients will turn around and become larger clients as they buy more property and things like that. As far as the next big opportunity for our company, in the next 24 to 36 months after these foreclosure moratoriums start to kind of wind down a little bit, I see a tremendous opportunity coming up in the foreclosure market, because I think there are a lot of people, a lot of small one and two landlords that are going to be pushed out of the industry, unfortunately. And that's going to represent an opportunity in the industry for a lot of investors to jump in or to grow at a very rapid pace. So it's basically be ready for 24 to 36 months down the road when the wave of foreclosures hits.
Are you seeing a decline in prices at this time in New York?
No, not in our market. Actually, Buffalo is probably one of the hotter markets in the country right now in terms of days on market and things like that. For being a, I don't know how I want to describe it. Buffalo consistently ranks on as one of the poorest cities in the country. And for us to have such a vibrant real estate market, which we're experiencing right now, we're in a deep seller's market with just over a month of inventory in the MLS. So we're experiencing a deep seller's market here right now with, you know, multiple offers and things going way over asking price and things like that. So our market's actually pretty strong here right now.
Yeah, that's what I hear. That's great. That's great. Mm-hmm. Wow. Well, we have kind of zipped by here on our time. I would like to move into what we call our wrap it up session, where I ask you a series of quick questions and you share resources that have been of value to you and will hopefully be of value to the people listening too. So if you're ready, we can go into our wrap it up session.
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. You got it. Favorite real estate book?
Probably, I like Gary Keller's books. I'm a big fan of Gary Keller's books. Just about everything that he's written, I've read at this point. But I would say Millionaire Real Estate Investor and Millionaire Real Estate Agent were probably two of the most compelling books that I read. And, you know, not all of the information that's in those books is 1,000% relevant to today. But there's a lot of great information that you can pull out of both of those books if you are looking to be an investor, or if you're already a real estate agent and you're thinking, maybe I want to own a brokerage, or maybe I want to specialize in a certain niche. I would recommend the Millionaire Real Estate Agent for that one.
Yeah, and I can vouch for the other one, the Millionaire Investor too. It's great, great resource. I tap into it all the time.
Yeah, all of his stuff is good. Even The One Thing is a really good read of his as well.
Yeah, that's a great, great book. Mm-hmm. And speaking of business books, what would you say your favorite just general business book would be?
The best book that I've read recently, I would say, was probably Extreme Ownership by Jocko Willick. It's a real eye-opener. When you start applying the principles in that book to how you run your business and how you run your life, and you realize that, especially me being the owner of the company, the buck stops here. The final decision at the end of the day, it gets made right here in my office. So taking the principles from that book and kind of applying them to how we operate our business and further how I operate my life has really been a kind of an eye-opener. I would recommend that book to anybody who is in a leadership position or considering jumping into a leadership position or needs some direction for their life. It's really probably one of the, even beyond just being a business book, it's one of the best reads that I think I have gone through in probably the last couple of years.
Yeah, that's great. Good recommendation. Mm-hmm. How about most valuable website for success, and of course, other than your own?
Well, our website actually is kind of a train wreck at the moment. It was, we'll talk about that later. But it basically boiled down to I was more interested in servicing my clients than getting a fancy website up. So our website's a little bit of a joke at the moment, but that's all right because we're still providing good service.
Awesome.
As far as websites that I frequent on a regular basis, there's a ton of knowledge at your fingertips right from Google. You can't underestimate the value of what the world's best search engine, really. I mean, we were looking for an appliance part this morning. Go to Google, found it in 10 seconds, you know? So you really can't underestimate the power of Google as much as that's kind of a cop-out answer. I have others, obviously. BiggerPockets has been huge. I've picked up so much knowledge over the years through BiggerPockets, and not even just the knowledge available there, but the networking available on the forums.
That's what I love. Yeah, that's great.
Is fantastic. I mean, the BiggerPockets forums are excellent. And then the other thing that I would recommend to people who are looking to get into real estate investing is go on Facebook. You know, everybody's got a Facebook account at this point. Go on Facebook, do a search for Buffalo Real Estate Investor, you know, and just look for groups, and you will find groups in your market that tailor to real estate investors. And it's a great way to network and meet people in the industry without ever having to leave your house, which, I mean, in today's day and age is pretty important, I guess.
Yeah, no kidding. Whole new normal. How about favorite app?
I got a mind blower for you on this one. We have been using this app. This is especially with COVID being as big as it is right now and everybody working remotely. The most used app on my phone right now is an app called Cam Scanner, C-A-M S-C-A-N-N-E-R, Cam Scanner. And it's literally the greatest app I've ever come across. If I need to sign a physical piece of paper and then send it to somebody digitally, but I don't have access to a scanner at wherever I happen to be, I can take a picture of that page and it converts it to a PDF. I can upload it to my Google Drive. I can send it to my email account, whatever I need to do. But it's that by far is one of the, just in keeping things moving forward, when it comes to paperwork, there's always, you know, paperwork is always the delay. Being able to sign something in my car, take a picture of it and send a PDF to somebody from the driver's seat of my car is huge. I would recommend that app. I know it's available on Android and iOS. One of my favorite apps. We use it constantly.
Great reference. That's great. How about a favorite quote?
Prior planning prevents poor performance.
Yeah, that definitely says it right there. It's so true.
That in sixth grade, I learned that quote from my math teacher, who was outside of teaching, obviously, he was a private pilot. And that was the one thing that he constantly referenced was prior planning prevents poor performance. It was actually written, you know, it was posted at the front of the room, and it was one of those things that stuck with me basically for life. It's one of those things that, you know, I always kind of keep in the back of my head. What are you getting yourself into, you know, before you jump into it? And it keeps you out of a lot of headaches. Just going through that thought process of, okay, what are the potential pitfalls? What are the potential potholes that I might find if I go down this road or whatever? Doing that pre-planning, doing that pre-thought is huge in being successful.
That's great. Great. Gets easy when to remember. It's all P's, you know.
Yep. I actually, great. Believe it or not, I have it printed out. I took a little piece of printer paper and printed it out. And I have it taped to the bottom of my monitor. I look at that quote every single day.
I love it. I love it. Well, here's one. I don't know if you're going to be able to handle or not, but hey, this is our big question here is, if you lost absolutely everything, okay, all your assets and all you have left is the knowledge you have currently, plus $1,000 in cash, what would you do with that $1,000 to relaunch your business?
So I have my knowledge. Do I have my network?
Yes.
So I've got my knowledge, I've got my network, but I only have $1,000?
Yes.
I'm going to start with networking meetings. I'm going to start with going out looking for properties that can be put under an assignable contract or something like that. You know, do the wholesale thing for a little bit to build a little bit of a nest egg. If I'm able to work, I'm going to go find some sort of a job that has a commission potential. Something where, and a good example of this would be if you can get in with somebody that's doing contracting. If you know how to estimate contracting and can make a percentage of every job that you sell or something like that, that's a limitless potential. You can make a ton of money doing something like that. So because I have that knowledge, that would probably be the route that I would go, would be trying to find some sort of high paying, quick paying job to put more money in the coffers while I'm doing networking and trying to find some sort of a property that I can put under contract, either as a wholesale or as a flip or something like that, would probably be the route that I would go.
Great, great stuff. Wow. Well, this has been really, really great, Andrew. I'm telling you, I definitely think there's a lot more we can tap into. Hopefully, maybe we'll have you back on and you know, talk a little bit more about the property management side of things too. I think it'd be great to sort of, you know, go inside the industry and help people to understand too. So maybe we can look at our calendars and see if we can get something down for later on that. But sure. Man, it's been great having you on. I'm sure there's folks that are listening that would like to, you know, either contact you or find out more about what you do. What's the best way for folks to do that?
So the best way to find me is to go to whatsdrewupto.com. Just like it sounds, whatsdrewupto.com. Well, and it got to the point where I mean, because we're doing so much between Own Buffalo and Rent Prep, and then obviously I have a life outside of real estate, small as though it may be. you know, it got to the point where I needed some place that I could quickly give somebody a link and they could find all sorts of stuff. So that's basically just a site that references a bunch of other sites. It's a link tree, but you can find links to the Rent Prep for Landlords podcast. You can find links to Ask a Property Manager show. That's our live show on Wednesdays at 10 a.m. on Facebook. You can find links to our Own Buffalo site. You can see what we're up to. We're constantly working on something. The other day, I just updated it. We posted a video of really gross video, actually, of how we just received one of our apartments back. It was one of the tenants we had that wasn't talking to us during this whole pandemic. And you can kind of hop on there and then click the link to see what that apartment looked like when we got it back. So it's there's definitely, you know, definitely ways to get a hold of me on there. But that's probably the easiest way is to go to whatsdrewupto.com and find me from there.
I love it. That's great. That's great. One source URL there. I love
it. Absolutely. Yeah, it just made life so much easier.
Well, Andrew, we're not quite over yet. This is the part you've really been waiting for. That I know that you've been practicing all week for. And that is our closing howl, you know? I mean, from Buffalo here. Come on. I know you're going to give us a killer howl. So I'm just going to sit back and just let you close us off with that howl.
All right. All right. Here we go.
Oh, that was good. That was good, man. You have been practicing. I can tell. I can tell. You got the right resonance in there, the tone, you know, the whole thing.
I'm a Bills fan. All we do is yell up here.
I love it. I love it. Well, Andrew, thank you so much for coming on the show. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it as well. What a great time.
Oh, it's been a blast. And I also want to thank all our old dog listeners out there, too, for joining us. I know there's a lot of other things you could be doing right now, but the fact that you've taken the time to join us means a lot, and we really appreciate it. Please note, everything that Andrew talked about today, okay, will be outlined in detail in our extensive show notes, and they can be accessed at our website at theolddogsreinetwork.com/blog area, and all you have to do is look for the episode with Andrew Schultz. Well, that's the show for today. Remember, cash flow is king and real estate investing the means. Until next time, keep moving forward and may God bless.
Thank you very much for visiting the Old Dogs REI Network. We would greatly appreciate if you would stop by iTunes and let us know what you think of the show. We would love if you could subscribe to the podcast, give us a 5-star rating, and write a review. The more ratings and reviews we receive, the more visible the podcast will be to others. Thank you.